Blog Talk Radio.
This presentation is brought to you by Jewel Publications, a subsidiary of the House of Jewels. Welcome to the Science of Melanology, presented by Dr. Jewel Kukrum, MD, microbiologist, preventative medicine, and hygiene physician, and Dr. Timothy Owens Moore, biomedical researcher, psychological psychologist, and professor. The House of Jewels is committed to teaching you information about the science of life and living. For additional information, books, MP3s, natural time calendars, and to register for the balancing program, please visit our website at www.thejewelnetwork.com. Any unauthorized use or duplication of this material is strictly prohibited. Thank you and enjoy your presentation.
Oh, good evening. This is the Melanology Hour. Dr. T. Owens Moore and Dr. Jewel Pukrum and Brother Maurice, are you there with me?
I'm here with you. How you doing today, Dr. Tim?
I'm doing quite well. I guess we're waiting on Dr. Pukrum in cyberspace somewhere. And I believe we have a discussion today about the origins of human and relating it to the topic of melanin. That's what we're going to discuss today. You think we can handle a topic like that?
Well, I'm pretty sure I can. I'm hoping that everybody else can. This is going to be some powerful stuff.
All right. Well, in that issue of origins, there's no way we can get around the reality that all people on the planet began and started in a place called Africa. So we know that Africa is in a certain region of the earth, and on that region is where we have the start of what we consider to be humanity. And we can go ahead and play on that word, H-U-E, humanity, and put that color on the top and the front to let us all know that it began in blackness and darkness. So there is no possible way that you can create any other, that is, ethnic group without starting with blackness first. Certainly has been controversy over the years because many people would like to think that, you know, everything started and was created by Europeans or from the Western view, and it's easy to then neglect anything that's dealing with black and African. So we've had all these negative connotations, but scientifically speaking, there's no possible way you can go around that now. So children, people in school are really not up to par yet because it's still a concern about how do you put that out when you still see black people being controlled or people of color still not being on in a state of power and controlling their environment. So it creates controversy. But science, melanology deals with science, and that's what we're going to try to focus on today. Talk about the origins and how blackness from the very beginning is key and critical.
Tim, we'd like to welcome Dr. Jewel online.
Oh, Dr. Jewel made it through cyberspace and got to us. Great.
Yes. Hi. How is everybody? I've been in cyberspace for a little while here at the door, and I'm so happy that you're with us.
Welcome.
And that, and that you are here with us. You know, Dr. Moore, I'm so excited, and they really don't know how blessed they are, but we have a group of middle school children who are tuned in and listening to us today. And with you being a college professor, they are going to get a college course literally today in regards to melanin. So I want to welcome the Liberty Middle School that's in Covington, Georgia. This is the 7th grade life science class. And right now, Dr. Moore, they are studying the layers of the skin and melanin.
Wow.
So before you, so before you go into the origins of melanin, I just wanted to lay out some facts for them to write down to make sure that they understand. So take out your pencils, et cetera. I have, about 10 little facts here that are very important. This is so significant, Dr. Moore, that we have the middle school now who is studying melanin because we now have the opportunity to begin to nullify and erase a tremendous amount of ignorance around this critical life-generating substance known as melanin. So if you're ready, my dear Liberty Middle School, let's get busy writing. So the first fact is, regarding melanin, the entire human race is melanin-dependent. The entire human race is melanin-dependent. No living cell, whether it's in animals or in humans, can exist without melanin. This is very, very important. So even though the literature you may read may talk about chromatin or pigmented bodies, what are they describing if they're still describing the melanin biopolymer, either in its entirety or a section or fragment of that master molecule? Two, there is only one race, the human race, and the correct spelling for that word is H-U-E-M-A-N. Now, there was a little linguistic procedure performed on this word, and the E literally was omitted. But as you know, your eyeballs reveal to you that obviously we have multiple hues of melanin in individuals worldwide. So if you lined us all up, et cetera, you would see that it's actually like a rainbow, that we're all human. However, the amount of melanin that is present in the skin and the hair and the type, because these are different types of melanin, Dr. Moore is going to tell you about that, you see this variation in color. So the word hue, which means multiple colors, is appropriate for describing our race family. So number two, there's only one race, the human race. Three, in people who appear to have very little skin color or melanin in their eyes, also in their hair, they possess melanin within every cell in their body. The only cell in our body that does not have melanin is the red blood cell. And that's a whole little process that happens as to how a mature red blood cell is created, but that's one of the characteristics that happens in the maturity of a red blood cell. It gives up its nuclear content, and all nuclear content is covered with melanin. Number four, all chromosomes, all genes are all present in the nuclei of all living cells, and they are always covered and protected by melanin. So every cell in the body, except the red blood cell, has a center library instructional unit we call the nucleus of the cell, and every nucleus of the cell and the instructional information therein, packaged in the form of chromosomes and genes, all are covered with melanin. Number four, therefore, all humans are black on the inside, regardless of the amount of melanin on the skin and in the hair and in the eyes. It's very important to remember. So do not let your eyes fool you. Everyone has melanin. They must have it to be able to exist in human form, animal form, on this planet. Number six, all humans contain the same number of melanocytes in the dermis of the skin. So since you're studying the dermis of the skin, you will find that relatively, because of all of the chromosomes and genes that have been able to be identified in what's known as the human genome, are basically the same for all humans. So this pseudo-segmentation or this pseudo-classification known as race is scientifically and biologically not accurate. These are social, political, and economic divisions that have no scientific basis. So all humans contain the same number of melanocytes in the dermis of their skin. Number seven, the activity of the melanocyte is based on three factors. Number one, genetic activity or inactivity. Number two, environmental stimuli. And most of all, attitude. That's very important. So did you get that? The activity of the melanocyte is based on one, genetic activity, two, environmental stimuli, and three, and most of all, attitude. Now, eight, all attitudes are chemicals. They are known as neuropeptides, and it is the neuropeptides which produce from our brain as a analog or literally as a model, a reflection of our thinking, that controls the activity of our genes. So all the nuclei of every cell in your body is always under the influence of what you are thinking. Very important to understand. So there are attitudes which will turn on genes and attitudes which will turn off genes. That is to say that there are thoughts that will turn genes on. There are thoughts that will turn genes off. Now, this is not anything that is just incredible. We know this. I mean, because a person can say, I do not feel like standing up and walking across the room. So they just, in their thinking, totally shut down the instruction, the gene's instructions that would tell the cells to produce certain chemicals that in a unified cellular collection known as an organ or tissue would inhibit those tissues from creating the capacity for you to walk across the room. So we do this all the time. But, again, not having this more detailed information about cellular biology, et cetera, the anatomy of the body, the neurobiology of the brain, we have not been able to connect the dots. And you, Liberty Middle School, are special students because you're given this information to begin to connect the dots. And I have just a few more facts here to give you. I want to say this, that all humans, and I heard Dr. Moore, Professor Moore, give that instruction, that all humans originate from a melanin-dominant source or origin. So regardless of how much pigment or melanin they exhibit in their skin, all humans have originated from a source that was melanated. Now, the term that we're using to begin to disperse and to nullify these misnomer language of race, is that we begin to describe people, if we have to describe them by their outside skin color, we refer to them as either being melanin recessive or melanin dominant, which is obvious. That's a scientific basis. It has no social, cultural, political innuendos with it. It is a factual observation. So they're either melanin recessive or melanin dominant. We do not refer to each other anymore by the pseudo label that we have been indoctrinated with. So an individual who would be considered Asian is a melanin-dominant individual, because to be able to have a hue in the skin that appears to be of a yellow content is a particular type of melanin. It's known as pheomelanin, and that type of melanin is made with a specific amino acid known as cysteine. So Dr. Moore can go into more of that, but I want you to really become astute now about what you're really seeing. So I postulate that the main factors which turn the melanin-producing genes on and off in all humans is attitude. Now, that's a whole big different discussion about the genetics of attitude, the influence of neuropeptides across the placenta, the neuropeptides that are actually bonded on the genes from chronic patterns of thinking, because we do inherit. Genes are also encoded with attitude. Yes, they are, very much so. So the attitude of the individual can and does control the activity of melanin production and the activity of the melanin-producing genes. So just remember, an example of that for us is Michael Jackson. Now, he made it very clear in his teenage years that he vowed that he would not live his life being a color. He got a lot of comments and a lot of PR about the fact that he was denoted as a black man who was being so successful with this album and that style of dance, and he did not like that connotation. So he decided that he would not live his life being a color. And so because of his decree, over time, his attitude literally turned off his melanin-producing genes. So at first, as the melanocytes began to become inactive, it happened in splotches. So this disease has been labeled vitiligo, but eventually his entire body became translucent, literally. So he actualized his decree by becoming a colorless individual. So that is a very important statement, my Liberty Middle School life science class, that you must be very careful about what you think and about what you say with intensity, because those are the statements that the genes will honor, and they will shut themselves down or they will turn themselves on relative to the words that you spoke, because those words are interpreted as instruction. You have been listening to the Melanology Show, hosted to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living. I am your host, Dr. Jewel, and my co-host, and we're so glad that he's here. Dr. T. Owens Moore are with you today, and we are talking about melanin, its origins, the origin of humanity relative to melanin, and we are welcoming Liberty Middle School in Covington, Georgia, who's been given the assignment to actually listen to this show. And so any of you who are teachers or principals, et cetera, worldwide, if you are having your class or schools listen to our shows, please let us know. And if there's any particular teachings that we can offer to them, we would be more than glad to do the research and to support you at that level. And so with further ado, Dr. Moore, can you give us further teachings on the list of 10 points about facts relative to melanin?
You said so much, I can't keep up with all that. I have to go by
of course
by
you
point.
Can. You should see Dr. Moore's head. He has a big head, which means he has a tremendous amount of brain tissue, and he is awesome professor and researcher. So this is little baby stuff compared to what he does.
So we don't lose our students. Let's go point by point by what you said so we can review, and then that's like the outline for the students as they're writing down their notes.
Point number was that the entire human race is melanin-dependent. That is to say that no living cell can exist without melanin.
So if we have our students understand, and it's not just students, but everybody, that melanin is a complex biopolymer. And this biopolymer exists, as you said, everywhere, and without it, there is no life. So from the very beginning of all origins, specifically speaking of us, our nervous system, there's a dark group of cells that work together within the womb to develop us into who we are with this complex body that we have. And what's deep about that, as you talk about the beginnings, the skin and the brain are really connected. If you look at the place where the skin is being developed during development, it's coming from the same place that the nervous system develops. So many neurologists don't talk about that, don't speak of that, but we now see the connection between the melanin that's there developing and the melanin that we see on the outside of our body. So there is a key critical understanding that from the very beginnings of womb development, as the fetus is developing, that darkness develops there. I think we have biblical terms that talk about out of a darkness came light. So the same kind of reality that we see in metaphors is the same reality that's existing in the scientific realm too. So yes, darkness is at the very beginning of all life. For us, it's melanin, but if you look at plants, for those younger listeners, chlorophyll that you study in your biology class is pigment. Chlorophyll is in the plant. Well, the melanin serves as the chlorophyll in the human.
So, Dr. Moore, you just want to tell them what a neurologist is?
A neurologist is a person that studies brain function. They know about how the structures of the brain work together to produce behavior, such as how you see, how you hear, smell. Well, all that is coordinated by the brain. So a neurologist, NEUROLOGIST, is a person that would be able to break down how brain parts work in order to produce behavior.
Great. Now, point number two, there is only one race, the human race, so H-U-E-M-A-N. The human race exhibits a huge variation in skin color due to the variation in melanin production.
So we must always understand that history can be used as a weapon. As it's used as a weapon, it can be manipulated to make people believe whatever the person who's writing the history wants them to believe. That's why that word history, his story, is somebody else's story. So when you break down that word race, I guess you say a philosophy, a certain kind of thinking that likes to split things up, saw different types of people and said, oh, that must be the black race, so we must be the white race, or that must be the red race. But in reality, race itself, as you're trying to explain to us, is a sociological construct. When we say sociological, we mean things dealing with the environment, society, how people and groups work together. But construct is just something that's made, like constructed, like created. So this race concept is a constructed term, and it has really taken us away from the reality that we're all humans and there's only one race, as you said, the human race.
Right, and that the human genome verifies this. That, you know, they've discovered that 99.9% of the human genome, that is, the genes and chromosomes, are exactly the same. There's a 0.1% variation. And even though that variation may be marked and very, very explicit and unique, still, the genome is exactly the same. So scientifically and genetically, there is no substantiation for seeing a group of people with huge, diverse, large percentages of unique genes. That is not true.
And we have to somehow make this a real important historical understanding, because we sometimes can't conceptualize that there were people that probably looked at everybody as equal in the past. I mean, we built civilizations. You see the monuments still standing on the continent, monuments that people today still cannot build. So they must have done that out of coordination, out of people working together. Well, when a certain mindset comes in to want to be in domination or control of the environment versus peace and harmony, it creates an environment that you want to split up and divide. So you then see a mentality that may be coming from the Western or European white experience that wants to always split up and divide. So over the years, over the thousands of years, as they split up and divide, when you divide, you can also conquer. So that's why this race concept is something to really try to understand from a historical perspective that was utilized, again, to control people.
Okay. Number three, in people who appear to have very little color or melanin in their skin, in their eyes and hair, they possess melanin within every cell in the tissues of their body except in the red blood cell, the adult red blood cell. You want to comment on that, Dr. Moore?
Well, as the fetus is developing inside the womb, it then grows into the human that comes out. So most people, as you said, have all the elements that are pretty much the same from the beginning. So the cells that produce the melanin are there, but there needs to be some chemical factors that trigger it to be produced in abundance when you compare it to certain people. Some people are dark, some people are light, some people are different shades of colors. Well, those different shades result from different chemicals that are making the standard chemical, which is melanin, exhibit itself in a greater fashion. But from the very beginning, everybody has that. It's your levels of enzymes in particular that's triggering the possibility for it to be more pigmentation in some people than others. But from the very beginning, yes, everybody has the potential and capabilities. There is a group of humans that are called albinos that lack the actual ability to produce the melanin, but they still have the cellular framework. They just don't have the chemistry to make the chemicals to make them dark in color.
That's correct. And in regard to the red blood cell, that's what's so unique about the blood cell, because the blood cell is the only cell in our body that is totally under the guise and directive of our thoughts. That is to say that it has no library, it does not contain a nucleus, it does not have any pre-program to give it any directives as to how it should function. It is totally under the influence of our thinking and the cells of the body, of the tissues that it flows through. It's flowing through the liver. For as long as that red blood cell is in the liver, it is under the dominance and the direction of liver activity. And then as it flows out and moves on to another organ, it's in the spleen, it then becomes totally under the influence of the spleen, et cetera. It's a fabulous, fabulous cell, and I really hope that your teacher will spend a significant amount of time teaching you about this ubiquitous cell. As a matter of fact, it is really what we call the everyday stem cell.
I want you to help me think through this also, because when I think of red blood cell, I think of corpuscle also. Correct term?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
If you look
that's an ancient term, but yeah.
All right. Well, you also at some other point in a lecture we broke down something about hemoglobin or I think chloroplast. I think that's what you broke down, chloroplast.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right. If you see any cartoons or any videos of high images of blood flowing through the veins and through the arteries, you see corpuscles waiting for another one to go through. If it's like a little Y, the artery will split, and one will wait for the other one to go through, and then it goes through. That's intelligence at the level of the cells working.
Right.
Now, I say that because if you see how people drive, you may want to get onto the exit ramp. Guess what? You know if you speed up, you might hit that car. The one that you might be seeing that's in front of you might not know you're behind them. They may know you're behind them. They may speed up or slow down. So each individual in that car is functioning on their own to what make the flow go right. It's the same thing happening in the bloodstream. Those corpuscles or red blood cells know what they're supposed to do rather than getting a traffic jam and creating a blood clot. Now you got a problem. Yeah, we create the blood clots from the bad diets, like from clogging up our arteries.
Well, but listen to just what you said. I think that's incredible to recognize that when an individual isn't healthy for whatever reason, that the intelligence and the manners, okay, the decorum of the tissues exemplified by the red blood cell is lost. And then what happens? Then now you get clot formation. Is that right? Now you get plaque formation because they have lost their regard for each other. They've lost their regard for how they're supposed to move through the capillaries. And so they bunch up on each other. And then what happens?
Right.
It's like a roadblock. They totally block off the whole flow of everything and all the tissues in front of that roadblock now, star
yeah.
becomes ill because there's no nutrients, no oxygen or anything now being supplied to the tissues. And that's
right.
exactly what happens when people don't pay attention, when people, for whatever reason, forget the decorum and decide that I'm just going to do it my way and there's a big accident. Exactly the same thing that happens in the body when the body becomes imbalanced and ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to make that highlighted point because I never really got a chance to talk to anybody about that, but since we're on the Melanology Hour, we're on the cusp of consciousness, and we're dealing with issues that people don't even think about. So I just wanted to throw that out for you.
Great. I love that. So number four is all chromosomes, all genes, and all nuclei of all living cells are covered and protected by melanin.
Well, you broke that down before at another lecture about chromo means what? Color in Greek.
That's true. Right.
So you have the chromosome name itself right there for you to know that organelle, that entity, that genetic structure, which really is the basis of all life, has structures that, you know, also melanin is made up of. You think of the nucleic acids and all the amino acids and all those elements that are found in the melanin molecule. It's almost like, does the melanin molecule come first or do those elements come first? I think you had an article you shared with me about the chicken or the egg, which comes first. And they say the chicken started first because
yeah.
it had to create the elements inside to make a certain kind of carbonite crystal to make that egg shell in the first place.
Right. But the chicken never comes without the egg. They
well,
just have to mature, but they're there.
But the science is trying to argue that the chicken has to make that element, and the chicken came before those genetic elements were to make the shell. That's how they broke that down.
Yeah, I know, but you know that's not accurate because they came together. One
okay.
was active, and the other one was basically dormant. And over time, they both would become active, but they both came together. The chicken,
okay.
yeah, the chicken
right.
has... Yeah, it's just like a little baby girl, you know. She's
mm-hmm.
born with eggs already in her ovaries. It's just not active, so, you know. So
right.
what came first? Did she come first or her eggs? And it's like they came together. And that's,
right. And
I don't know where they went with that. That's like so
yeah.
strange.
But you see, and that's
okay.
the deep thing about the Western thinking. With me as a scientist listening and reading and getting caught up in their discussions, it's either this or it's either that. That's not how we work and operate. It's both.
Oh.
It's a holistic way of looking at it. So you're right on saying that, you know, then they both came at the same time rather than the science showing that something triggered it in the chicken itself to then make the elements for the egg. But like you said, they come at the same time.
Okay. So number five, therefore, everyone, all humans, are black on the inside of every cell, regardless of their skin color. So when we look at the anatomy of the cell, cellular biology, we know that the nucleus of the cell is melanated. We know the chromosomes underneath are within the nucleus of the cell are melanated. The genes are melanated because all of this protein, which is information, has to be protected from intense and harsh light that would actually cause that protein to lose its original structure in space and change its formation. So they have to all be protected. Also, the little battery in the cell, known as the mitochondria, also have melanin in them because melanin modulates the exchange and the storage of energy in the form of heat and light in the cell. So this works hand in hand with the function of the battery. So if you then wanted to look at what would be the main color of the cell, it would primarily be dark or melanated. So everyone may vary in their external skin color, but on the inside, they're black.
Okay, I think that is clear as you can be.
Right. So it's interesting because as a surgeon, you know, of course, I'm looking at the liver that's brown and the adrenal glands is pink, and I'm looking at the omentum, which is the layer of fat that covers the viscera of the abdomen, and, you know, it's kind of pinkish yellow. But when we then look at the cell, if you take a little pinch off of it and then look at it under a microscope, if we don't stain it, the only thing that we're basically going to see is these melanated areas. Is that correct? I mean, because you're a neurocellular biologist.
Yeah, from a cell culture perspective, I probably couldn't be accurate to respond to that, but I hear what you're saying in terms of the internal dynamics are all the same in all people because we're all part of the human race. If you see a car, see a big car, a little car, but the car inside has a radiator, has a pistons, cars have changed over time, but the elements are all there to make it a car. Some just rev higher, some work faster, But guess what? There's still all the same elements in there. So as human beings, we all have the same elements that make us who we are as humans, because there's only one race or one experience on this planet called humanity, and that is us.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Number six, all humans contain the same number of melanocytes in the dermis of their skin.
Well, we've got to break down what melanocytes are so people can conceptualize that. For those that can look at another person or just even look at yourself and see your skin, you can see these little, like, triangular cells. If you look closely on the top of your skin, those are called epithelial cells. Those epithelial cells are what's covering your skin and keeping, you know, our body intact. They're a little porous because air has to get in and out. That's why we sweat. But those little cells, epithelial cells, we all have that. So conceptually, we all also have melanocytes. Those are cells that actually produce the melanin. So they are there in the skin just like the epithelial cells are, but the purpose of the melanocytes is to actually produce and have that melanin formed as an even tone throughout our outside body. So everyone has those cells, but they may not have the correct enzymes, as we said earlier with one of our points, may not have enough of the correct enzymes to actually push that melanin up to the top to make a person dark in color.
Exactly. So we know for a fact that people who are melanin recessive, who in the past have labeled themselves as being white or European, have melanin, even though they may live in Denmark and their skin in Great Britain, where you will see that they look extremely white in the skin to the extent that you can see the blue veins literally through the skin. You can see the pathway of the veins and even some arteries and capillaries.
During the winter months, those individuals living in those environments, where do they go? They go down to the islands. They get a little dark, which means, guess what? They can tan, which means they do have melanocytes. There
right,
it is right
exactly.
There.
But those melanocytes that they have are very, very sensitive to light exposure, the amount of light they're exposed to. And if that light exposure is not relatively intense, the amount of melanin that remains in the melanocyte is very small. It's a very
right.
small amount, and it does not lay flat within the cell. It stays what we call pycnotic or balled up into a little ball. So it doesn't occupy much surface area within the melanocyte. And so, therefore, the cell literally is transparent. And so that's why we can see into the deeper layers of the skin where the blood vessels lie in the dermis, because that melanin is balled up and it does not lay flat. So it does not create a surface that would literally reflect light toward the eyeball, so we don't see any light. It's nothing bouncing off of the skin. The skin is absorbing all the light, and so therefore we can see the deeper tissues, the deeper structures.
Well, I think that's how I like that point you just made about the eye, because a person of a melanin dominant or a non-melanated person can see because the pigment in their eye absorbs the light, so the light operates properly. So no matter if you're dark, really black on the outside, or yellow as an Asian, or red like a native person of this land, or black like an African, no matter what those, or white, that is, we all see because we have something on the inside of our retina called the pigment cellular layer of the retina. Now, if you look at that person as an albino, they will then also lack that pigment in the eye, and that's why then they have to wear dark glasses to prevent that light from getting in. But under normal circumstances, everybody on the inside, even though we're saying they're different on the outside with their color, inside, the eyeball has the pigment layer that's going to absorb light. But those who are deficient in that pigment, there's also a disease called retinitis pigmentosis that could develop. But for albinos, that's another indication of, in addition to lacking on the outside of the body, inside they also have some challenges, and the eyeball is a great example of showing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. The ultimate pigment, melanin, is so critical in so many areas that still science is yet to discover. And so what I'm postulating also is that with the stem cell research and with what I call in vitro organ generations, et cetera, they will find that when they are able to recognize and reconcile and reckon with the melanin biopolymer, they will have much more success in being able to grow organs, much more success with transplant activity in medicine. It's so funny, they're kind of skipping all around it and talking all around it, and they don't recognize until they recognize and understand melanin's relationship and how it modulates and orchestrates energy, enzymes, and cellular activity, they are going to always have a deficit in whatever they are creating as far as tissue. This is very, very important. So, again, even our science has been affected deeply by these illusions of race, and that they have totally ignored this huge macro polymer that is responsible for modulating all enzymatic activity, all cellular activity in the cell. But yet and still, you're going to control and manipulate the cell with difficulty, you will, because they have to recognize and reconcile what melanin does.
All right.
Now,
next point.
You are listening to the Melanology Show. I am your host, Dr. Jewel, and my co-host, Dr. T. Owens Moore, is with us today, and we're always excited when he's with us. And you have tuned in to the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living. And again, we want to welcome the Liberty Middle School in Covington, Georgia, the 7th grade life science class. And again, it's wonderful that you are studying the layers of the skin and melanin, and that you will be one of the first generations in the 21st century to have the truth revealed to you about race and melanin, because there's only one race, the human race, and that substance known as melanin that you've asked about that gives color to the skin is a very, very important biopolymer that all humans must have to be able to exist on the planet. It's a necessity. So with that, we have a list of facts that we were going over thoroughly with our Liberty Middle School students. And so also for our listeners worldwide, this gives you an opportunity to really get the grounded, basic facts about what's going on with melanin. So fact number 7, all attitudes are chemicals known as neuropeptides. And it is a neuropeptide which is produced from our thinking that controls the activity of our genes as well as our cells. Dr. Moore?
Yeah, that's a heavy one for the middle school. Is it middle school?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
But what we're teaching them at that middle school level are things that people in medical school aren't even studying.
That's true.
So that's
why I said they're getting a college course today. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is pretty deep because this one point is really a heavy one that may be hard to break down, but there are two ways that I'm going to look at it for you. One is that you spoke about neuropeptides. Neuro meaning the brain, peptides for the audience are small-chain amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks for proteins. Our bodies are basically protein. So the amino acids are like the Lego blocks that make bigger structures, like the receptors in our bodies, the skin, the nails, the hair. I mean, so proteins are extremely important. Peptides are definitely essential. And all these elements, as they come together and create different kinds of Lego blocks, they create different parts of our body. Well, one very important one is called propiomelanocortin, long name, but the reality is that this large molecule breaks down and cleaves into smaller peptides. And guess what? Over time in history, there's the possibility that the change of thinking as people have evolved has caused that large chained molecule to break down to smaller chain molecules such as ACTH for stress, melanocyte-stimulating hormone, not just to make more melanin, to also reduce fever in the body. You have beta-endorphins that help out with pain-killing mechanisms. All that is broken down from one gigantic molecule. So your attitude and thoughts and your thinking has an impact on how then the body operates to have these chemicals work in the body. There's a whole topic of discussion called psychosomatic illnesses, where people's thinking and thoughts can then have an impact on how, you know, they are then less resistant to viruses, bacteria, and disease. So basically, this one large molecule is one example of breaking down what you just said. And our thinking can then make those additional chemicals operate in a certain way. Because there's no really one chemical that has one role in our lives. these chemicals have multiple roles, and your attitude, exactly, as you say, can make a, have an impact on that.
Right. So the abbreviation
for opioid melanocortin would be POMC.
POMC. Right. Exactly. So remember that POMC students. Alrighty.
Okay, let me make another comment that, like I said, the students are getting that, you know, medical school students don't need to talk about. The nervous system really is just a sophisticated piece of skin. Okay, check this out. Why? Because the same chemicals that we find in our brain are found where? In the skin.
In the skin. Mm-hmm.
Guess what? We have not always talked about that. Guess what? In medical school, they do not talk about that. So we're now dealing with the reality of we have now a new generation of thinkers to now understand this a little bit better, not to discard this topic of melanin. Now let's go ahead and proceed and develop better models to what address the humans so we can have better health issues.
Well, right. I mean, well, you're one of the few authors, Dr. Moore, that even recognizes as a neurophysiologist that the melanocyte is a modified nerve. It's
right.
A modified neuron, nerve cells. So all of these melanocytes in our skin are nerve cells. And, of course, that you will not find in the average anatomy book.
And can I also make another comment that maybe I'll get you to think about, and our students will hear? The skin has layers. We agree on that, right?
That's correct.
The cortex, the part of your brain that is like under your skull, the layer of the cortex, has six layers. Did you know that?
Yes.
Those six layers are actually the part that we're calling the cortex. But those six layers and the layers of the skin, there must be some relevance as to why they both form the same way. And without those layers in the cortex, your thinking is not right. Because that's where all your intellectual reasoning comes from, those, that cortex. So I think that's a pretty powerful connection between layers in the skin and also what layers in the cortex.
Right. And, well, since you brought that to the student's attention, I think it's very important that we really start paying attention again to what it is that we put on our skin, especially in the form of cosmetics. And I tell you, it is not a very attractive sight nor experience to behold an individual that has significant disease of the skin, because there's no garment, there's no clothing that will ever be superior to your skin. And so when we don't know how to take care of the skin, when we put toxic substances on the skin, I don't care what they, whether they have the label lotion on it or whatever, you must begin to study what this is because, again, just like Dr. Moore has pointed out, you are applying substances, chemicals, directly to your nerves. The dermis is actually an extension of the brain, just like you said. So you are putting these chemicals on your skin, et cetera, but it's really on your nervous system, on the extension of your brain. And you want to be clear about the fact that what you want to put on your skin should be edible.
Yeah, what's really deep about this and why people should really pay attention, and you would really check their lives if they don't want to pay attention to it. But if you look at The Secrets, The Right Guards, some of those like deodorant, if you can't read those chemicals, you should not be probably putting it on your arm. And you know that going into your body. A lot of it has aluminum in it. What is aluminum? A deposit that can seep into your nervous system and sit as a toxic element, which means over time you die of toxicity. So we have to be very careful about the types of deodorants that you're certainly using. And if you can't read the label, don't know what that is, you better be careful because it will come back to haunt you. So focus on natural elements that can be used, like coriander or aloe. There's so many other things that can be used rather than aluminum to put into your skin to stop, well, and the arm to stop that perspiration.
All right. Well, let me just add on to that, Dr. Moore, because a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, that's not real deodorant if it's not, you know, Secret or Gillette or Right Guard or whatever else, et cetera. And, you know, after 15 or 20 minutes, you know, I have body odor. Mm-hmm. But no one's teaching them that the reason why you have body odor is because you're eating foods that have so many chemicals in them that the body is having a difficult time eliminating them. They get stuck in the skin, and therefore the bacteria have a party. We have bacteria on our skin. We need bacteria on our skin. But what happens is that when the bacteria are eating substances here that really are not healthy for you and really are not biodegradable, then the urine and the feces that the bacteria makes begins to really break down very rapidly, and it has an unpleasant odor. Now, most of you will be like, what is she talking about? Well, people don't get this, is that this is a huge symbiotic relationship that we have. And these bacteria, of course, if they're living on us, if they're living in us, then we have to have them in our body, digestive tract, et cetera. Yes, they are living on our skin. Of course, they have to urinate and defecate just like we do. And so when they do that on your skin, et cetera, and if they've eaten very toxic substances, because that's what you're excreting from your body, obviously it's just like you. If you eat something that basically is not really wholesome for you, your stool has an odor. Your urine has an odor, and the same thing is true for the bacteria. So instead of having to use a poisonous substance in deodorant to totally kill the bacteria, which is what happens, and to then cover up the odor with the fragrances they put in there, one needs to pay attention that eating clean, wholesome food that has minimal chemicals in it, or that the food literally is real. So many people eat foods now that do not grow. These foods are actually made in a laboratory. They've never seen a tree, a bush, a plant. They've never photosynthesized because they do not exist in nature.
And before you go on to the next point, what does JUUL stand for?
Justifiably enchanted with enlightened living.
That's what you're trying to explain. I mean, it can't be any more clear than that. You know, the whole issue of life, you're just trying to explain that, look, you need to pay attention to what you're doing to your body. You can't have a healthy life if you don't deal with your body, and that's all you're trying to say.
Exactly. So I think it's very important that we begin to recognize here that if we are eating foods that are not biologically existing and that what we're eating is inert, the body really doesn't know how to handle that. And, of course, you're going to have all kind of reactions. Odor is just one of them. I mean, can you imagine? I see these beverages that are purple, and I see the beverages that are blue, and they're orange, extremely, you know, neon orange. And I'm like, can you imagine? Has anybody ever seen a neon orange river or an aqua blue, you know, lake like this? And all of these beverages have never, ever come from an original source, except the only thing they do have is a solvent. And as you know, students, solvent is actually a substance that you dilute other chemicals into, and that solvent, the universal solvent, is water. That's the only thing that is natural in many of these beverages, the water that's in it. Everything else is totally man-made, it's synthetic, and it does cause the body problems. This is what I have postulated. I postulate that the main factor which turns the melanin-producing genes on and or off is attitude. And now this is a whole big discussion, especially in embryology and in obstetrical medicine, okay, because so many people are unaware of the transport system of the placenta. They are so unaware as to how so many substances cross the placenta, and we know for a fact that if the mother is upset, she's irritable, that those are literally neuropeptides and chemical hormones that go right across the placenta to the baby, and when the baby is saturated with that, all of its uterine, intrauterine life, this baby comes out very stressed, easily agitated, hyper-responsive, crying all the time, etc. They're very uncomfortable children to have to care for, babies to have to care for, but they were, again, put into stress continuously because that is what the mother was in. So to then have a debate that an attitude, a way of thinking, could not be responsible for turning on or off genes is totally ludicrous. I mean, we shouldn't even have to spend any discussion time on that. The key is we need to identify what are the attitudes that have actually turned off melanin production, that have turned off the genes that are responsible for producing the enzymes to allow the melanocytes to produce melanin, and then now to be able to treat the individual so that they will stop the production of these neuropeptides. So in this case, since we're moving into the 21st century, they will be able to then turn on the melanin-stimulating producing genes or either heighten their function so so that they can produce enough melanin where being exposed to higher concentrations of ultraviolet light, gamma rays, cosmic waves, X-rays, infrared, microwaves will not be a problem for their skin. See, I think this is the bottom line treatment that is being asked of us now, but we cannot treat ourselves innately, naturally, for being melanin recessive if we continuously generate attitudes about melanin. We need to look at this very critically, my world listeners. You cannot have opinions, which then are neuropeptides, about melanin and not affect your own melanin. So if an individual thinks that melanin basically in someone else is unsavory or unhealthy, they've automatically inhibited, traumatized, altered the function of their own melanin in every cell of their own body first. And I think that's very important to understand that if you know that you are sensitive to light, that obviously having more melanin would definitely benefit you, then you must maintain a neutral attitude about melanin. Melanin cannot be significant in your life any longer with an adverse or an exceptional attitude about it, because either or actually alters the functioning of the gene, which also then alters the functioning of the melanocyte. So we know for a fact, even just turn on the immortal genes that you have. We've all been born immortal, and if you tune into my show next week, we're going to discuss that in detail, because we have a wonderful woman whose cells serendipitously were acquired by science, have proven that when human tissue is put in a supportive, neutral environment, they live indefinitely. They have no lifespan. All of our tissues were created to be that way, but we have not learned how to sustain a supportive and neutral environment long enough so that our immortal genes can become active. They do not become active in alkaline or acidic environments. They do not. Neutrality, neutral environment, pH 7 is necessary, and it has to be for a long period of time. And so with everybody having the need to be so opinionated and to have to comment on everything and judge and put into some type of criteria everything that they perceive and experience, the blood is always kept in a polarized chemical status, and the immortal genes will never turn on. So therefore, that's why you're so blessed, my students at Liberty Medical School, your medical school, Liberty Middle School today, because you get the opportunity to recognize that by learning how to be an observer, to be able to be astute in recording auditorily, that is hearing precisely what is being said, to see accurately what it is that is projected upon the eyeball, but not to have an opinion on it, is one of the greatest, greatest conditioning and one of the greatest capabilities that you can develop as a student, to be an accurate observer, to be an attentive and accurate listener, but only deal with fact and do not overlay any opinion on what it is that you see. If you're able to train your brain to do that, you will, first of all, always keep your tissues healthy. You will not age them. You will be eligible to become immortal after you reach your full maturity. And most of all, you will be able to align yourself with anything that you envision, because you have not created a polarity that would cause you to actually inhibit forming a relationship with whatever it is you're interested in. Even you can have a likeness for something, as we know, which is way too great, too magnetized to something, which also causes problems. So that's why the neutrality is very important. So with that, Dr. Moore, if you have any more comments, and then we're going to go to the telephone lines as well as to our chat room to answer any comments or questions they may have.
Yes, well, we are at the top of the hour, so I guess after I make this cosmic connection, with this cosmic consciousness, because we have to go back to where we started about speaking about evolution and the origins of man, and in this last point you just made about our thoughts turning on and off genes, specifically the melanin gene. I can't speak directly to your comments, to your explanation that is clear in your explanation, but for me, I don't have the evidence to go along with that. But what I do have to support your thinking is from an evolutionary perspective. Can you imagine living in an environment where there's a hyena that's about maybe 6 feet tall, a 6 feet tall hyena, or 80 foot long python snake, or a saber-toothed tiger that's as big as a rhinoceros? Can you imagine living in an environment like that? Probably not, right? But our ancestors did. So when we look at evolution, there's so many fossil lines that have led to the people that we are today as Homo sapiens sapiens. But there's so many fossil lines that have come along over the millions of years, and they've had to survive. Some have had to survive under different environments where they had to stick together. There's evidence about a gene called the oxytocin gene. What is oxytocin? A neuropeptide. What does oxytocin do? It's released from the pituitary gland to assist with women with parturition or labor when they deliver a baby, and also milk release in terms of feeding a child. Well, oxytocin is also in men. Well, guess what oxytocin is also associated with? Bonding, people sticking together, working things out together. Guess what? If you got a 6 foot hyena, 80 foot long python, or a saber toothed tiger as big as a rhinoceros, you better stick together. So over time, those chemical elements were able to be used to help to endure bonds, to create strength between people working together. And so now you have a thought process, a thinking, triggering the chemistry to make the people survive better. So I understand your point about you could turn on and off this melanated gene, this opportunity for it to work right or not work right. So, like I said, there's evidence that can be talked about over the evolutionary process, so I hear you on that. I just don't have the evidence, you know, or research to kind of support that. And hey, we're at the cusp of consciousness, so we then can start to explore these items and, you know, present the research that can produce that.
Okay, well, engineer, do we have any questions at this time?
We have a great question out of our chat room.
Okay.
In the light of us talking to Liberty Middle School, there's a question: when is an ideal age or grade to teach about melanin where children can start to appreciate the information?
Well, CNN reported a study recently where they went to the first and second grade to ask those children about melanin and what they thought about skin color. And it was very interesting that the response of the first and second graders was quite biased and very much uninformed, and it had a lot of social, political overtones to the extent that many of the children had intense biases that they had already formed toward skin color that had in no way any foundation. For example, they took images of a child, and they repeated the image, but they changed the skin color of the child. Same hairstyle, same dress, but the child went from white to pink to brown to red to yellow, and then finally the child was dark, dark brown. And they asked the children questions such as, who would be the bad child? And 90% of the children picked the very dark brown-skinned child. They asked who would be the child that the teacher would like the most. They picked the pink child or the white child. Who would be the child that basically would be the slow learner? They picked the dark-skinned child. And so they were very, very surprised that these children so young had had these biases, because they had nothing to really do with any facts. So even children who are quite brown-skinned, when they were asked this question, who would the teacher not like? They picked the brown-skinned child just like themselves. Who would be the smartest person in the class? They would pick the pink-skinned or the white-skinned child. No one liked themselves. And one little girl was very attractive. And she said that she did not like her brown skin. She says, as a matter of fact, she said it gets icky and really dirty at times. and it seems like the dirt won't come off. This is what she said. They recorded her and they released this on international TV. So, of course, the parents were quite embarrassed, all of the ones that recognized that their children showed a lot of bias and very unhealthy opinions about themselves. And it was wonderful to see, though, you could tell the rearing practices in the home, the discussion, the type of entertainment that the children were exposed to, because those children whom the parents had definitely made it very clear that everybody was smart, that skin color had nothing to do with your friends. You know, you pick your friends for more substantial reasons, not based on skin color. By these foreign interviewers in this foreign environment, these children were healthy enough not to point out any particular child. So one little girl was quite intelligent on this question because when they asked her, well, which child here do you think the teacher would like the best? And so the little girl said, well, the teacher should like all the children. It shouldn't have anything to do with their skin color. So, of course, she didn't pick any of the children. So a gentleman, a young man, was asked by the interviewer, which of these children would you be more likely to have as a friend? And so the young man said, my friend could be anybody. I wouldn't have pick a friend by skin color. But these children were such a small percentage of the large population of children that they had interviewed. So in summary, to answer the question, obviously to destroy this illusion around skin color and qualities of individuals needs to start at birth, if not in utero. Because by the time these children enter first and second grade, they are very much biased and very, very ignorant about the facts of people making decisions for the rest of their life on skin color that they don't even know about. Those children know nothing about melanin, but yet still they form these opinions that aren't even healthy for themselves. So we need to start right away, and this is something that the parents, the adults, must heal over. Then, therefore, the children won't be contaminated with this type of ignore rant. Dr. Moore?
It can't be any more clear than that. I would say as soon as the child is able to eat, because you're dealing with a lot of the food items containing berries and fruits and pigments, and kids like sweet things. So as you teach them that there aren't any, like, white fruits, you know what I mean, or white phenol plants. So as they're eating the fruits that are dark, which are good for them, antioxidants, which are good for them for their health, you're teaching them the issue of how darkness and pigmentation is important. So as early as they can eat, it just starts to then appreciate the beauty of blackness.
Well, those individuals who tuned in last week, they got a wonderful teaching, Dr. Moore, on how all of these substances, free radical eaters, are all part of the melanin biopolymer. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, without
so
a question. Teaching that young age.
Yeah, so we were able to show that all of these substances in resveratrol and pomegranate and in the strawberries and the blueberries and the lycopene and the carotene, all of them are part of the melanin biopolymer.
Right.
Yeah.
So when kids are eating, rather than eating a jelly bean or M&M, you know, or a Twizzlers piece of candy, you're teaching them the pigments of natural products. And as you teach them the importance of pigments and natural products, you would teach them the importance of just the beauty that people share in their outside appearance. Same thing.
Exactly, and their wholesomeness. So, engineer, we have any more questions? Any hands raised?
There is a bit of activity in the chat room, not exactly questions per se. I know that there was one question that came up earlier in respect to the Michael Jackson conversation, about how his attitude and his frame of thought allowed him to turn his skin translucent. Is it possible for a melanin recessive individual to activate their melanin to get darker?
Oh, yeah, without question. I think I told a little story a couple weeks ago where I was in New York finishing up one of these books that I'm writing here that's going to be released soon. Yay! And I was at the beach, and I saw this lifeguard who had all the features of a European that normally would have been melanin recessive. However, he was definitely deeply pheomelanated, had very deep golden brown with a tinge of orange skin, like myself. And I just thought that was just really amazing. So it just wasn't on his head and his arms. I mean, it was his whole body. So I walked over to him because I was just so amazed at his skin color, and I put my arm up to his, and he said, oh, yeah, almost, you know, and it was just amazing to recognize that he had been able to stimulate in his melanocytes this degree of pigment production. So therefore, obviously, he had to make peace with, be receptive to allow his melanocytes to have full activity to create that degree of pigmentation. Okay, I was born with mine, but he wasn't, but he was able to basically change that function. So he didn't have sunburn, et cetera. Even his skin had literally thickened, but he had this really uniform golden brown hue all over his body, his legs, everything. And so obviously his attitude and obviously constant exposure to the sun allowed him to take on this natural hue. So, yes, they can, but it requires a change in attitude for them to be able to do that. It has to be something that they want to do and allow themselves to have permission to do so. But they can't decide that they want to have melanin for themselves and then turn around and look at somebody else who has melanin and make all kinds of illogical, biased, and prejudicial judgments about them. Because melanin is melanin. Morphic resonance, and we've talked about that before, that all melanin communicates with itself all around the world. So if you have opinions about someone else's melanin, you've already formed that opinion about your own as far as the melanin biopolymer goes, and it's not going to work for you if these opinions, et cetera, are hostile and bring with it neuropeptides of stress, that they're not going to change your activity. So you can't want to be brown and then have a very prejudicial attitude toward naturally brown people. Your melanin is not going to hear of it, and it's not going to respond. And that's why we talk about the fact that having a neutral attitude is paramount to be able to have full control over and full communication with your genetic capability, with your genes. You can turn any gene on and off at will if you have been able to maintain a blood quality, which is neutral, and that allows you to be able to access that gene, because in a neutral bloodstream, it will acquiesce to your instruction. Any more questions, comments?
Well, we actually have a question from Timmy, who is one of the students at Liberty Middle School. And I think he was hoping to get a brief explanation, if you could run down the notion of melanin one more time. I know we've only got 12 minutes and it's quite the subject, but if you can give him a clear couple sentences to help him understand.
Well, we can break it down for him, though. First, think of melanin as a pigment, but it's a pigment that has complexity because it doesn't just serve like pigment in your art class where you can paint something on a wall or paint something on a paper. It has a biological element to it that it can also produce and control and modify life. And if you look at some three simple life processes that you can say it can do, it can neutralize bad things in the body. When we say bad things, we're talking about toxic things. So melanin can absorb and neutralize bad things. It can also speed up your nerve impulses. As a black substance, as a dark-colored substance, it absorbs heat. So think of it as an absorber. It helps to speed up the nerve impulses in your nervous system so that they can go faster. The last thing and easiest one to remember is not so much the easiest one to remember, but another one is it can transform energy. When we say transform, that means when you are just sitting there at your desk or looking at a computer, you hear things, you see light, you hear sound waves, you see light waves. All that is energy out there in the universe. Well, your body must interpret that. So where you find melanin in the body, for example, in the eyeball, like we talked about earlier, it helps to absorb the light waves to transform those light wave energy into electrical impulses so your brain recognizes that. So you can look at this complex molecule, this complex pigment serving these other processes in enhancing our life. So there's a lot of advantages. The disadvantages to having this molecule is that it can then take on some of these toxic elements. We spoke earlier about when we put things on our skin, we have to be very careful about the toxic elements that can be put into our skin because that melanin may absorb it too much, take it in, and then cause a problem. So on one end, fantastic, great. On the other end, maybe potentially dangerous because it's absorbing and taking in some of these bad elements that are in our environment. So in a nutshell, that's what I would say for Timmy.
Well, thanks, Dr. Moore.
All right.
And Timmy, I think that you should be very honored that our esteemed professor took the time to give you a summary here of what we've discussed throughout the whole show.
Dr. Moore, I want to thank you for being here with us. We always love you and your expertise that you bring, and we will be expecting you back.
Okay.
Next month, as usual.
Peace
so
and
everybody,
blessings.
Yes, we love you, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are certain you now have many things to contemplate and hope that you enjoyed the presentation. We appreciate your donation and encourage you to visit www.thejewelnetwork.com for any additional information, products, and program registrations.